This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Mads.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Bottom half of the eighth coming your way. Red Sox trying to protect a two-run advantage against the Rays. And Bobby Pointer back out there for another inning. And Gomez will lead things off. Last time up, he doubled. Here he hammers a high, deep drive to left field. That one's going to be out of here and way out of here. Gomez, who had doubled back in the sixth inning, touches the ball to tighten it up. It's 3-2. I was a little surprised to see him come back out for this inning.
I agree.
You know, he got the out with a man on, got the pop up on Kiermaier in the seventh inning.
Let's see if he comes out now. Yeah, here comes Alex Cora. He's down to a run-run ball game. You've got Carson Smith ready in the bullpen. You've got a right-hander, Duffy, coming to the plate. Time to make the move. But I was with you, Dave. I was a little bit surprised. After he got that big out to end the seventh, I did not expect to see him in the eighth.
It's a reentry Monday. Felger Mass, fully loaded program. Everyone in their normal places, and everything's on the board from the weekend. The Celtics over the Raptors, the Bruins continue their run to the first seed and winning the division, and how important is that? We got thoughts on that. Brad Marchand gets fined again for another cheap shot hit, this time a cross-check to the face. Was that yesterday or the day before? It's all blending together.
It was against Philly. Yeah, Philly, right.
So he got,
right, Saturday was Florida.
In which I thought he might get a third man in. Did you see that?
There
was a scrap where he started to fight somebody, and it was really the Florida player that came third man in. I forget the particulars of who it was, but there was almost a third man in situation with Marchmont on Saturday. He almost got fined twice. So anyway, that's on the table. He hit on that heavyweight fight, such as it was. Again, official Felger and Maz apology on that one. If you watched, based on our recommendation, sorry. That was a dog pig of a fight. Got Celtics on the board. In fact, that's where I want to lead this hour, because Luke in Vermont says the Celtics can win with their current roster. They can win what with their current roster, Luke? Be more clear.
If you're including the guys that aren't healthy, I'm saying, with Kyrie and those guys, not their the team they've been playing with the last week.
Okay, so you're saying with Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, they're a championship team?
Well, not even without Gordon Hayward. This year, I think they could get out of the East, and it's a long shot, but what if Curry's not healthy? What if he doesn't come back? Houston gets to the finals. Boston can beat them. It is a long shot. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if things fall right, I mean, they could just as easily get bounced if Kyrie and Marcus Smart don't come back for the first round. But you were talking about needing those two stars. Recently, the Spurs, Kawhi Leonard, I think, was a rookie or is in second year, the year Miami beat them with the Ray Allen three. They had Miami on the ropes, and Tim Duncan was like 38 years old. He was not the prime time Tim Duncan. So there's a team in recent history.
Who didn't win?
But they won the next year, Felger.
The Spurs won the next year. Okay.
Yeah, when Kawhi Leonard was in his third year, so it's 1 year's difference. My point is, if you have Rozier, Marcus Morris, Tatum, Jaylen Brown, all those guys to support Kyrie Irving, then you add in Marcus Smart and Al Horford, who do a lot of the intangibles, that could get you out of the East. And if Golden State fails for some reason, because eventually something's going to happen and they don't make it to the finals, whether it's injuries or there's a team dispute, something's going to happen eventually.
So, let me stop you. I agree with you that you can beat Houston. Okay, so I agree with you there because I think James Harden's a loser. And I think Mike D'Antoni is ultimately a loser. His team score and do nothing else. They don't defend. They don't rebound. They're kind of clueless. And so I agree with you. You can beat Houston. Houston's not getting past Golden State. I don't care if Steph Curry's out the rest of the year.
So I doubt it too, but I don't think he's wrong to say the Celtics would have a chance against Houston.
I agree. So I agree with that. I don't think Houston's going to get out of the West. All I'm saying, and I have the Celtics coming out of the East too. I do, and I had from the day Gordon Hayward got hurt, I told you, they're going to be right there, 1-2 in the East. But as I look at it harder, I'm just, your formula there is not traditionally how you do it in the league. There's a one, there's a two, there's a three. And that's generally how you do it. What the Celtics have is a one, and then any given night there could be a two, never mind a three, and you're relying on a different role player to step up each night, or a kid like Tatum or Brown to step up on a given night. And that works in the regular season. I'm just telling you, traditionally, that's not how you win in the postseason. I'm sorry. I'm not wrong about that.
No, and the only way that it would happen for the Celtics is because the conference is so weak that the door opened for them. You know, the 2-3...
Oh, no. I mean, you can go a certain distance. Maybe you go three rounds.
No, I'm talking about getting to the finals. The only reason it would happen for them is because the conference blows.
Yeah, with the landscape of the conference, like, they could get out of the East.
I mean, Toronto should be better than they are, but there's just a mental component there.
I'm telling you, that team has got no sack.
Losers.
They got no sack. It's just something about when you crank it up on them, they just can't get over that hump. And so, you know, 2 through 5 on the Celtics, you can pretty much shuffle the deck and put them in any order you want.
I mean, they're all good. And some of them should be really good in time. It's just right now, that's generally not how it works in the NBA.
No, it isn't. I'm not arguing that point. I mean, totally. Again, whether it's, if you were to say it's Horford, Tatum, Brown, Morris, or Morris, Tatum, Brown, Horford, or...
Could be any night.
I mean, do any order you want.
And Rozier's going to come in there one night, too.
Right, like, he tack him on as the sixth guy if you want. Like, it is... There's depth there, and that makes them tough in the regular season. But when they're going up against the best of the best in the playoffs, I don't think those guys are good enough.
Max in the truck has a thought on the Red Sox. Hi, Max.
Hey, what's up, guys? I'm already questioning Alex Cora as a manager. The bullpen, he's all over the place with the bullpen. JD Martinez, we're paying him how much? $22 million a year, and he's already sitting him after 4 games? This is why I never wanted Alex Cora. They should have taken a look at Joe Girardi. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Okay, well, you're preaching to the choir on that. I would have taken Girardi in a minute. The thing about JD Martinez is I think this is an organizational decision. And I think the way that he's not some of those bullpen calls, like when to take out pointers, him. But I think that the way he's handled the starters so far and the way he's handled the outfield rotation was determined by Dombrowski and him and you know, the organizational decision. That's not even really him managing. I bet they had that all mapped out before the season even began.
Well, so it feels to me there's a lot of that going on. Like, I would even say with the pitching staff in the games, that Cora's going into every game with a plan and then generally adheres to it.
Well, yeah, right. Kimbrel's not going to be used in traffic. He's not going to be brought in with men on base to start. He's not going to be starting with two inning situations. And then he goes 2 outings. He's not pitching a third straight day to begin the year. Like, this is all, he didn't make up that decision that night. That's all predetermined.
Yeah. And so, like, the you know, it's nice to have a plan before the game. You got to have one. I'm not criticizing him for that part of it. I just think that in the case of, like, Pointer on Saturday was striking. I'm sorry. You bring in a kid lefty to get a lefty out at the end of the seventh. He's done. That's it. That's the kind of pitcher that guy is. One batter, he's done. Two of the next three are righties, and you let him face a righty to lead off the inning?
I didn't see it. That sounds brutal.
It is. Big mistake. As soon as he was on the mound, I went, you know, sitting on my sofa, I went, wow, he brought this guy back out there. And then first pitch, Gomez hit it about 500 feet. I mean, he absolutely clubbed it. And it was a piece of crap curveball on top of it.
Eric in New Hampshire has a Bruins thought. Hi, Eric.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. What do you got?
Felder, I want to talk. I'm so excited about the Bruins because they remind me of the 1980 Islanders. So much similarity, so much grit. They never give up. You know, just like the other day. 30 seconds, we're going to score, tie the game. Just like the Islanders do, baby.
Okay, well, the 1980 Islanders also had Mike Bossy and
Brian Trotsch, both of the Pot fans, didn't they?
Like 8 Hall of Famers. Can we just slow your roll on that with the Bruins roster, please? That was a 4-time Stanley, as an all-time team. Stop.
That's another one you can add to your earlier game.
You know you're a Bruins honk, .. When you compare this Bruins team to the 80s Islanders that won 4 straight, going for 5, would you stop?
See, to me, they're a little bit more like the 88 Oilers.
No, I really thought it was more like the 77 Canadiens and then 5 straight championships. Good Lord. Keep it in your pants.
Well, you don't see similarities between Donato and Gretzky?
The thing about them not giving up and the it factor you've been talking about all year, Murray, they definitely have that. That thing in Philly yesterday, they had no business being anywhere near that result. And somehow they get 2 points out of it. They score 3.8 seconds left. Like, it's that kind of year. That I'll grant you. There's no question about it.
I mean, again, you come back to that intangible, like, you know, that it factor. They have it, man. They absolutely have it. No two ways about it.
Billy in Rhode Island, for you, Maz. Go ahead, Billy.
Yeah, Maz, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
I listen all the time. I love all you guys. I think you fit well together with different sides of everything. But you are one downer about these teams that do well. I don't care if it's the 17-game streak the Celtics had, the now Connecticut, because they got beat, you're all excited. The Yankees win the other day, you're all excited. It's just that the teams that do well in New England, I called before and said the same thing.
I don't care about New England.
You're a downer on them.
Okay. I care about Boston.
You just can't go ahead and say they're good.
Okay, does UConn count as New England?
No. No, please. It might as well be New York, New England. UConn doesn't count. And again, what was that guy's name?
Billy.
Billy, did you know that UConn has never lost a conference game? I think they're 101-0. But then they get to the Final Four and they choke like dogs. 2 years in a row in the semifinal, they choke. This time at a last-second shot to Notre Dame, and the girl did it again yesterday. The woman did it again yesterday. A ridiculous shot she made to win the tournament. But they play nothing but lambs all year. And now they get into the Final Four, and they actually have to play someone with players who breathe. And they lose. You're telling me you don't take joy in that? They stack the team with the best players in the country every year. It's not even close. It's a joke. They beat someone in the first round of the tournament by 63 points. 94-31 or something stupid like that. It wasn't even a game. And we're supposed to root for them? It's better if they lose. It's better if they lose. It's way better if they lose.
Tugger Mass. The Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Well, there are some disjointed relationships right now within the Patriots organization. The one relationship that is still as strong as ever is the one between Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski. Gronkowski is truly considering retirement and was really even in the regular season because of the physical and mental anguish that he was feeling as a result of the 2017 season. But Tom Brady is the strong force in his mind right now. If Tom is committed, then Gronkowski feels like he is committed.
Ooh, when you say disjointed relationships,
yes.
Are you alluding
to
one
that?
Between Gronk and Bill Belichick?
Many around both people feel like time could ease this bit of disjointed nature between the two. But we're talking about frustrations on both sides of the aisle here. For Gronkowski, he is just physically and mentally spent and doesn't feel like much has changed this offseason to make him think that that's going to be any different this coming year. That being said, like I mentioned, he is, quote, pretty certain he'll come back as long as Brady's committed. Belichick is a little bit frustrated because he feels like Gronkowski is not, quote, all in, which is obviously a critical component to his blueprint. He has cited things to people close to him as nuanced as an Instagram post that Gronkowski posted about Danny Amendola signing with the Miami Dolphins, mm-hmm. under which he said, be free, be happy. That didn't exactly make Belichick very happy. He was reading the underlying message there. He wants to know that Gronkowski is all in. Guys, it is a fluid situation, but one that I believe can be rectified in the coming days, weeks.
Really just echoing reports that we've heard from Tom Curran from NBC Sports Boston for weeks. Greg Bedard for maybe even longer than that. So it's nothing new, except the news element to it, Maz, is I think it's still not resolved. We're still in the same place. They still haven't figured it out. To me, that's newsworthy. And now it's ESPN, a quote-unquote outside place that's sort of coming in and, you know, confirming what some local guys have been saying for quite a while about this situation. And again, the overall point of the story is supposed to be positive. Gronkowski is pretty certain he'll come back when there was some uncertainty about his future. So this is supposed to be, all right, he's coming back, cool. Except you read it and you're like, eh, it still doesn't sound good.
Well, if you read it, it's the uncertainty. It's obvious. The uncertainty you don't have to worry about anymore is that he's going to walk away from football because he's just done with football. He's been beat up too much by it. There's other things he wants to do in his life. He wants to be a movie star. He wants to be a WWE superstar. No, he still wants to play football, but he still hates the boss.
So Darlington writes in the on the written version of the story, for Gronkowski, the physical anguish of the 2017 season, which led him late in the regular season to tell people he was likely going to retire, was paired with some mental fatigue from the high-strung culture within the Patriots organization. And that's a piece that I get caught on, because the physical anguish, I'm all for. You know, I'm all with you, man. You've had 8 different surgeries. You've had 3 back surgeries. You've had multiple concussions. And you want to walk away. Mad respect. Like, I get it. And you want to talk about the physical toll and all of that. Like, I totally respect that and got it. The emotional anguish? The mental fatigue? Oh, please. Now what? So what? Because you want to gyrate your hips after scoring a touchdown and Bill won't let you? That's mental anguish? And, you know, I'll even grant Gronkowski the Guerrero stuff, even though I side with Belichick on Guerrero. If you have a trainer that you work with who gets you right physically, that's important to you and that's something worth fighting over. So, like, I'll even grant him that. But the stuff where, you know, Amendola leaves and he sends out the Instagram post, you know, good luck out there, be free, be happy, all caps, like, oh, you're not free or happy here? Like, that's starting to bug me. So I asked the audience earlier, I'll ask you again. Who's bugging you more in this? Are you getting bugged with Bill Belichick and his hard-ass nature? Or are you getting bugged with Brady and Gronkowski, who suddenly can't take it? After 18 years of Brady and however long for Gronkowski, eight of Gronkowski just taking it, like professionals and football players, they're whining about their mental fatigue and being emotionally spent, and Brady and Giselle, he wants to be happy and appreciated. Like, all this, all of a sudden, out of these guys. That's starting to bug me more than Bill Belichick being a hard ass.
Well, it should bug you. I mean, to me, again, this all spins off of Brady. I just think, because I don't think Gronk pulls any of this. And Murray, to refresh my memory on that Instagram post that Gronk put out there on Amendola, did Brady like it?
Yeah, I believe, no, he commented on it. I forget what the exact verbiage was, but it was essentially like right on with
something
a bunch of hand clap,
exactly.
Hand clap emojis. Like, yeah, you got out of prison. Congratulations.
I mean, that's just as bad. In fact, that might be worse. Like, if Bill's pissed about the fact that Gronk made the comment on Instagram, then how can he feel about Brady endorsing it? Like, that can't be good. I just think, look, maybe this thing with Gronk is coming to a head. The draft's coming up. They visited with the tight end not too long ago. And, you know, maybe there's this threat of him. You know, I don't think it's a coincidence that all of a sudden we're hearing news that Gronk is leaning towards playing when Belichick might be warming up to the idea of trading him. I mean, I don't know. You know, maybe Bob from Easton's right. But if I'm Gronk, I got to believe I want to play with Brady. And Bob from Easton believes that Gronk wants out of here. I have to believe Gronk wants to stay with Brady.
Bob and Easton's heard that from sources on the ground that Gronk's gone to a West Coast team. For what that's worth, never mind Bedard, Curran, Darlington, small potatoes. Bob and Easton has Gronk leaving. But it's still, to me, the news element is that they're still at this point. Nothing's been settled. So what has to happen, folks? Who has to come to the middle? And this ties in with the question. Who's bugging you more with this? The players are starting to bug me. Gronkowski and Brady are starting to bug me. Like all of a sudden, your mental anguish? You're emotionally spent?
Like they're working in a sweatshop.
Oh, yeah. Listen, it's got to be the players.
The high-strung culture? Is it really that bad, Gronk? I mean, it's real. Is it? Yes, you can't be the full... You can't come out in the press conferences and be a total jackwagon. You can't. And you can't thrust your hips. You can't do that whole thing, you know, like you can other players. And remember when he said that in the middle of the year after that Miami game? I mean, it was a funny quote at the time, but it's really sort of instructive now. Again, this is after the Miami game, I believe. At Gillette, where Brandon Cooks rode him like a pony. And Gronkowski was asked about it after the game.
Rob, the Patriots haven't been making full use of the more relaxed celebration rules this year, but following the final touchdown of the game, it looked like Brandon Cooks appeared to hop on your back and ride you like a racehorse. How did that particular scene come about?
That was not planned or anything. And we got yelled at. We're not allowed to talk about celebrations. That's what we got told, but I kind of want to talk about it. But I kind of don't, because I'll get in trouble. So I don't know what to do. So it just happened on the spot. It wasn't planned. We'll just keep it there.
So half of me, like, does that sound someone who's, you know, experiencing emotional and mental anguish? Like, it doesn't really sound that way. So maybe they're just playing this part up. But I don't want to hear it. Like, I don't want to hear about your, like, be free, be happy. No, that's not the program here. And you know that's not the program here. That's not the way they do it.
Well, see, and the other part of it for me is, aside from, you know, you say, who do you think is more right than wrong? For the good of the team, the players have to give in here. If Belichick has to give in, he's done. You know, when I say he's done, you know what I mean. He's already had his legs cut out from him on the backup quarterback, on the successor in Jimmy Garoppolo. Now he's going to cave in to Gronk and Brady too and give them more power going into what might be his last season?
And this is why I think the Brady-Gronk coup is in play here, and that is, yeah, so Brady, who hasn't restructured his contract, everyone's still surprised that hasn't happened, can go to the Crafts and say, okay, I'll restructure it, but that money has to be allocated to Gronk. Gronk has to be back. Whatever you want, Tom, say the Crafts. So they do that. And in turn, they make another football decision without getting Bill's okay with it. So it's the second football decision made. They go over Bill's head, and Bill says, you know what, enough. You basically forced me to trade Garoppolo. I got the return for you, second-round pick. You want to be mad about that? And now you're going to bring Gronk back in the fold when I'm willing to trade him? No, I'm out. Middle fingers in the air, and Josh McDaniels is the head coach.
So this has been percolating for a while. You know, even before this, again, Bob and Easton did make a good point. All those joint statements about the injuries, totally unique. Now, how do you think Bill Belichick has felt over the years having to put his name to joint statements with Gordy Gronkowski on the injury status of one of his players?
But if Belichick's going to coach this team now, he's got to reassert himself. Because between the whole, you know, and he did that with the Alex Guerrero thing, but now the players are pissed about Butler. You know, guys are signing on other guys' Instagram posts. If Bill gives in on this one, he's in trouble.
And again, this is Tom Curran's been over this, and Bedard's been over it. Curran mostly, you know, he said it on, I think it was February 26th, talked about Gronkowski considering stepping away has not been a happy camper. And then Bedard followed up the next day. And Bedard wrote this, and I love this. This is one of my favorite stories of the year. Bedard says, I didn't know it had gotten quite that bad. Boston Sports Journal members from the beginning know that I wrote about Gronk's demeanor during camp and wondered what was going on because something didn't seem right. Yep, body language again, like Malcolm Butler. Bedard writes, basically what happened was Gronk came out on the very first day of training camp and completely dominated and was also having a blast. At one point, he caught a touchdown right behind Bill Belichick and did an exaggerated touchdown dance. From that point on, Gronkowski was very muted in camp. Or muted.
Muted.
He was very muted in camp. The happy-go-lucky Gronk was rarely to be found, and he had some issues in practice. He was even ragdolled a few times, blocking. I wasn't sure what to make of it at the time. I guess Belichick likely told him to knock off the dancing in practice, which is his right. But did that happen to tick off Gronk, who had worked his butt off to get healthy and back on the field? No clue. And again, I actually have sources on the ground as well. I know what the touchdown dance was behind Bill. It was the full ball in the air, hip gyration, you know, sort of groin in your face dance behind Bill.
In the baseball world, we call that the Stanton.
So just picture that. So they've been having this back and forth, and the Guerrero stuff, and Gronk is feeling fatigue, and dot, dot, dot. First day at camp, he touches a touchdown catch, and right behind Bill is
Gronk, like, doing the hula dance.
Shaking it in his face. And then the next day, he comes out and he's all Grumpy Gus. Like, it's funny, but it's sort of like this thing's been percolating for a while. And if Gronk, so my whole thing is like, I mean, half of me says, Bill, lighten up. Like, for God's sakes, who cares? It's not important. But then the other half of me says, and more than half says, shut up, Gronk. We don't do the touchdown dances here. This is not what this place is about. This is not Seattle with Pete Carroll, and this isn't a player's culture. This isn't a Rex Ryan team. This is a Belichick team, and this is the way they do it. You know this is the way they do it, and it does work. So keep it in your pants, literally.
I mean, the players clearly have gotten to the point where they feel empowered. Now, I'm sorry. I think the owners had a hand in that.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It does defy explanation to a degree until you start kicking over some rocks and talking to some people and trying to get, you know, your fingers on the pulse of it. And I've done that quite a bit. And he didn't enjoy himself in 2017. He did not have a good time, despite the fact his body was in a better situation than it's been in a long time, ever maybe, despite the fact that he is one of the most dominant players at any skill position. Starting to wear on him. Physically, mentally, the atmosphere here in New England.
Just to clarify really quick, so when you say in 2017, so a lot of people look at that, the concussion that he suffered in the AFC Championship and said maybe that's what scared him. Was this going on before that?
Yes.
Okay.
This started in training camp. He seriously considered stepping away from the game in training camp. He kind of had it. At that point, his body wasn't responding. He wanted to train a certain way. The team didn't necessarily want him to train the way he wanted to train. They were at loggerheads, and he was, you know, he was pissed. And the season played out, and by the end of it, I don't think that some of the principal players on this team were really happy with the atmosphere and the climate all the stuff that we've reported about, all the stuff we've talked about, they still need to have a hell of an air clearing at Patriot Place to get these guys back.
5 weeks, nothing's changed. It's just, I find that interesting. I find that telling. And there should be some movement. You said they released their offseason schedule today, Murray, so the offseason program begins when?
Hold on.
Like in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
So these guys start to come back in. I'm sure Gronkowski has a workout bonus that, I don't know, $250,000. I mean, sometimes it's, I don't know what his specific one is, but it's generally in that range.
Yeah, April 16th is when the offseason program begins.
So he's got to work out here to collect that bonus. Usually that's the way it is. And so the guys start to come back in. They start to work with the team. Let's see if Brady and Gronkowski are fully invested in the offseason program. That'll be your first clue whether there's been some thawing.
I mean, they got to show, don't they? If they don't show.
I mean, there were years where Brady was in California. You know, he was lived in Brentwood and lived in L.A., and, you know, he missed a lot of years in between here.
Okay, like, when's the last time, though?
It's been a while. So he moved back, I don't know, 5 years ago or so?
Hmm.
I think roughly coinciding with the drafting of Jimmy Garoppolo.
I was just that sort of what I was, you know, connecting the dots there.
It roughly times out.
Yeah, of course it does. Like, I just think, given all the speculation and everything else, man, if they're not there, ooh, that's a bad look, isn't it? I mean, and I say, I don't mean necessarily, I mean bad look for the whole operation.
Well, just a bad look in terms of where they're at.
Yes, exactly. And that's what I mean. Like, you would look at it and say, oh, you know, they haven't figured this thing out yet. They better get that settled. And the draft is what? 23 days away? 3 weeks away? 3+, right? Like, you know, maybe they're drafting a tight end either way, so maybe there's no bearing there. But if I'm Belichick, I would like some answers.
Okay. Thoughts on that and everything else from the weekend here on a Reentry Monday. Mike in Danvers on the Red Sox. Go, Mike.
Yeah. Hey, how you guys doing? Good show. Maz, you're a baseball guy. So,
in theory.
I just got to understand what your logic is, and actually all three of you agreed that Jackie Bradley should be out of the lineup. Now, I will agree with you guys 100% that JD should be in the lineup every day, no doubt about it. You pay the guy, he should be in there. But my question is, let me ask you, has Andrew Benintendi had a hit yet this season?
It's a good question. I don't even know. He hasn't done much, though, that's for sure.
I don't think he even has a hit yet.
Okay. Right?
So with that said, Jackie Bradley was on base 3 times yesterday. Okay, so my question to you is, what is the logic behind not sitting Benintendi and sitting Bradley instead?
Okay, can I answer? Because Bradley sucks. And that's overstated for
effect
on purpose. Benintendi should be a future star. Jackie Bradley is a borderline everyday ball player, in my opinion. So that's why. And it's the fifth day of the year. So Benintendi is allowed to work out of a 2-3-game slump.
I mean, to me, it's simple. It's Martinez, Betts, Benintendi, and Bradley. Who's the worst of the four?
Bradley.
It's not even close.
The guy who hits for a month every year.
Right. He sits. Like, end of story. Like, to me, it's that simple.
So the rotation is, I think, kind of aggravating because you promise this J.D. Martinez outfield reps, obviously, to get him here. And now you've got to live up to this promise. And ideally, he's just your designated hitter, which is what he should be. But now you're sitting Benintendi, which bugs me. Bradley, less so. But either way, it's sort of a deal out there, all because you had to shoehorn him onto this team, and the only way to get him here was to promise him outfield stuff, is what it feels like.
Yeah, bugs me. I just think Martinez should be in the lineup. And look, I know they're in a National League ballpark. Okay, so no DH. Someone's going to sit, and maybe Cora doesn't want him. I mean, not to take Cora's
point. Yeah, but if J.D. Martinez wants to play in the outfield, you can start to appease him by putting him in the lineup and having him in the outfield tonight.
How about 2 nights in a row? Because you get the next day off anyway. You got Wednesday off, then you're coming home.
Didn't he play
him the next two?
Didn't he play in the outfield Saturday and Sunday?
I think that's right. Yeah, I think that's right. Or he might have DH'd on Saturday. No, you're right. Because Bradley sat Saturday,
yeah.
Benintendi
yeah,
Sunday.
Yeah, they have this
right.
rotation going on
right,
out there.
Right. So it'd be 4 in a row, actually.
Which, again, I don't know. He's the DH. John in the truck. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I'm agreeing. Mike, I kind of took your stance that, you know, he's beat up and everything, and if he wants to step away, good for him. As soon as I heard mental anguish,
oh, please.
I said, you got to be kidding me. Would Belichick not pick up the placemats from TGI Fridays and the crayons? And just, you know, to suck it up, play your football. It's in the same way for 8 years. You've been here 8 years. It's the same every year.
Yeah, and now, finally, after 18 years of Brady and 9 of Gronkowski or whatever it is, Those two guys can't handle it. Like, really? Why? What's changed, you two? And that's sort of, I think it reflects on them, not on Bill.
Oh, it definitely reflects on them. Like, because never in their, never would any of them ever even have thought about taking on Belichick. So like, I'm curious as to what I think. Look, it clearly all goes back to Brady. Gronk never would have done it this way in his own. Ever. Like, no way. Like, because Belichick looks at him and goes, I don't let him do it. Why would I let you do it? End of story. So it starts with Brady. Maybe it does go back to Deflategate, the whole thing landing in Brady's lap. Like, you got to be kidding me. You know, Brady's sitting there. Is that thing, whole thing is breaking, and Bill saying, Tom can answer to the footballs? Oof. If I'm Brady, that's the one I will be pissed at forever.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mass.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
13 seconds left. Chop free by Krejci. Held in by the Bruins. Still held in. Far circle. Now back is centered. Fired. They score! With 4 seconds left, the Philadelphia Flyers had three, maybe four chances to clear. And the Boston Bruins drive it out in front. And Bergeron was the guy who hammered it home. The Bruins have come back to tie it at three and shocked this crowd in Philly.
That was one of those scheduled losses, and they pull out a point. Bergeron with 3.8 seconds left. Unbelievable.
So they could lose tomorrow night technically and still win, right?
Oh, yeah. Win
the number one seed in the conference, I mean.
Yes, they're 2 points behind with a game in hand. So if they lose tomorrow night, they're tied still with a game in hand.
Right, so they win out, and Tampa can't catch them.
That's right. So they can lose tomorrow, and it's still in their hands to win the division, which, good. You know, I think that's relatively important. I think Jersey's a better first-round matchup than Toronto.
No question.
And I think that Toronto facing Tampa in that first round, one of them is going to get knocked off, which should benefit you if you make it out of the first round. So I think that there's just all sorts of... I think that's good. Good for them. It's getting to the point, though, Maz. We showed this graphic on TV last night, NBC Sports Boston. Since November 15th, which I think was the day they benched Tuukka Rask, interestingly enough. But since November 15th, the Bruins have the best record in hockey by a good margin, like 6-8 points over Nashville. They have the best record in the Eastern Conference since that time over Tampa by 16 points. 16 points. So they haven't just been the best team in hockey or the best team in the East. They have been by far the best team in the East for going on 4 months. And you're going to face Jersey in the first round? We're now getting into the territory where you can't lose. If you lose early in the playoffs now, this is one of the biggest chokes we will have seen. If you can play this well for this long and prove yourself this many times over and then go one and done.
If they get Jersey, I agree with you.
Even Toronto, they should beat Toronto, Miz.
Okay, but you realize that. How would you like to be Tampa? You have the third best record in the league, or third most points in the league. Okay? In the first round, you're going to get the team with the seventh most points. That's a hose job of epic proportion. Like, talk about getting screwed in the first round.
The three best teams in the East are
right:
Boston, Tampa, Toronto.
2-3-7. 2-3-7.
In the whole league.
Right. In the whole league. Which is why I think...
Getting out of the division in the first round.
Oh, huge. Yeah. It's huge. Get out of that division. Absolutely. Put that one on Tampa. Let them deal with Toronto. That series will be a barn burner, if you ask me. Like, there'll be a ton of goals scored in all probability. I want nothing. If you're the Bruins, you gotta win the division. Gotta finish first. But if they then end up in New Jersey, you cannot blow it. Cannot blow it.
Corey Schneider sitting there, one of the best goalies in the league. He can steal you around.
Yeah, they should still win that. Okay?
They should win that series. If they lose that one, holy smokes! So that's just the Bruins continue. The beat goes on for them. Rick Nash to me is a big one. You got to get him back. He's still not skating, I don't think, although he is working out. So,
see, that's a good sign, I think.
That is a great sign. Carlo probably gone for the year, which is a blow, but not a killer. He wasn't guaranteed to be in the playoff lineup anyway. I would have put him there. He would have been in my lineup. But he's your fifth or sixth defenseman, so you should be okay there. You're Miller, Grizzlick, McQuaid, Krug, or Holden in one of those spots, I think you're okay. You're okay. That's not going to be a killer. Rick Nash, to me, is a big one. Rick Nash is a big one. And I find it interesting what they're doing without Rick Nash, with Donato and DeBrusque both on the same line. And I find it interesting that Donato's the one that goes to his off wing, which tells me Donato's ahead of DeBrusque, because they can't do that with DeBrusque. They don't feel confident doing it. That shows you how much they believe in Donato, that they've kept him on the second line but have him play his off wing. I guess he's a center in college, so he's more used to playing on maybe that side of the ice or whatever, but still, I think that says more about Donato. You see his goal on Saturday against New Jersey?
Yes.
I mean, it was Florida then. Florida.
Yes. Yeah, and DeBrusk had a pair on top of it, right? I just think Donato, in terms of shooting the puck, is off the charts. Like, ridiculous. Absolutely freaking ridiculous.
Okay, so there's your Bruins minute, and we got that on the board with everything else. We've talked.
To- I know I say this over and over. I don't recognize them anymore. The way they play, it's hard to recognize them.
We continue with your phone calls. Dean in New Hampshire has a Red Sox thought. Go ahead, Dean.
Yeah, I just want a little something, talk a little something about John Farrell. I know it's an afterthought, but I thought he was screwed last year because he had so many injuries. And also another question. Too bad they can't get Neil Huntington in Boston as GM and get DeBrusk out.
Okay, Bruce Harrington?
He's with the Pirates. Huntington, Neil Huntington.
Okay, Huntington, I'm sorry. Let's leave that to the side. Bring back John Farrell. So a few little, you know, second guesses on Alex Cora, a few little piddling things, and we get the John Farrell didn't get enough credit call. Day five. Beautiful. Oh, I just love it.
Yeah, I'll take Cora over Farrell.
Me too, but there's been a few things that have caught your eye early this season.
Well, so again, to me, the Pointer thing over the weekend. On opening day, Bobby Pointer was not brought into a game, and Alex Cora said, no, I'm not bringing him in that situation. You know, 2/10 rookie guy, first game, blah, blah, blah. Then on Saturday, he brings him into a 3-1 game with a man on base. So he's facing the tying run. I mean, it's a tight, the whole, all game, every game in that series was tight for the most part, except for the first one. So he wouldn't bring him in on opening day because the situation was too much for him. But he brings him in 3-1 to face the tying run, left-handed batter Kevin Kiermaier in the seventh inning on Saturday. He got Kiermaier out. Then Cora sends him out to pitch the eighth and face Carlos Gomez.
Righty.
When they go right, left, right, the Rays do to start the inning. So it made no sense whatsoever. And on the first pitch, Gomez hit one about 500 feet. See you later. So I just feel like, and this to me has been consistent with how Cora has managed all weekend. I feel like he's all over the map a little bit. You know, we won't bring Kimbrel in the eighth. But then, you know, you did it in spring training. You said you were going to do it. I feel like he's searching.
So
he's
anyway.
Searching. He's hunting for a method. And, you know, it's going to take a while to figure it out.
The Alex Cora second-guessing and the bring back Farrell, that just renews my faith in the salty Boston sports fan. It hasn't gone all Sweet Caroline on us. And it all just happy-go-lucky crap. And so that Cora thing is actually the second favorite thing I've seen today along those lines. The first is in the chair next to Jim Murray here in our Town Fair Tire Studios. If you'd please hold this up for the
my pleasure.
NBC Sports Boston simulcast audience, where we broadcast across New England and the country every single day. This was sent to Jim Murray by a fan.
Actually, it was from the Atlanta Patriots fan club, a dude I met when I was on that Drive for Five bus a couple of years ago.
Why don't you explain to the radio audience what you're holding up?
I am holding up an officially stitched Patriots jersey, a home jersey, even with the Super Bowl 52 patch on it. But more importantly, it's got the number 52 on it. The number 52, but the nameplate reads Bill Blue SB, meaning Bill Blue Super Bowl 52.
I tweeted out a photo of that.
That is brilliant.
In case you want to take a look at it.
5 championships, 8 Super Bowl appearances, and you can be that pissed at the coach's decision that you're going to generate that shirt. I love it.
People should be.
Well, it's true. I mean, it's pretty darn close to true. At the very least, he kept one of his better defensive players on the sideline for the game, and they couldn't stop the Eagles.
I will wear this proudly.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.